Welcome to the February session of the Court of Appeals. My name is Frankie Moore, and I'm currently the Chief Judge from North Platte. To my right is Judge Rhett Inbody from Wahoo, and to my left is Judge Francie Reedman from Gretna. And I might mention that this is Judge Inbody's second to the last oral argument session, as he will be retiring at the end of March. So my last opportunity to sit with him on the bench. Wanted to recognize that this morning. With that, we'll start with our first case, which is State versus Price. And after I call your case, I will repeat it again for purposes of our recording. And I might also remind you that we are being live streamed, so if you have any sensitive material, please keep that in mind. You may approach. Good morning.
Good morning. I'll have to apologize. I'm fighting off this cold that everybody seems to have, so I hope you can hear me. My name is P. Stephen Potter. I represent Brittany Price in this appeal from a Custer County case where she was charged with child abuse resulting in the death of the child. The issue that would appeal is the abuse of discretion in Judge Noakes not changing venue. I was concerned about venue, and so on August 9th of 2016, prior to the trial, I brought to the court's attention the publicity that had been in the paper and on two different papers and on the news media and on Facebook. And I brought that to the attention of the court because of the small size and of the county. And the judge denied my motion for a change of venue. I then, on August 17, after a voir dire examination, again made a motion for the court to change the venue, and again made a motion at the end of the case. I think there's no disagreement that the analysis of this case is in the Dixon case, and there's eight factors. And before I get into those eight factors, this isn't on the record, but the day that the trial started, and you couldn't put this in the record, there was a feeling of anger. There was a motorcycle group that...
Mr. Potter, but if it's not in the record, you can't consider
okay.
That, can we?
So I'm going to go the eight factors and do them from reverse, the eighth factor. The size of the area, and Custer County in the 2000 census was 7,391.
Is that in the record?
What?
Is that in the record?
I don't think that was put in the record.
I don't think so.
No. And Broken Bowl was only 3,778 people.
Did you ask the court to take judicial notice of the size of the community or the county?
I did not.
So how does the record reflect then the size of the county and the limited number of people that were there?
The record does not reflect that.
Is that a problem?
It is a problem. But that's only one factor in the eight. The severity of the offense, child abuse resulting in the death of a child, the 1B felony. She was sentenced 30 to 40 years. The number of challenges, and the court, and it's in the record, asked if there was anyone who didn't think they could render an impartial verdict. and 23 of 42 prospective jurors indicated they couldn't.
Not all of those, though, were based upon the pretrial publicity, though, were they? I mean, weren't some of them because they knew the defendant or they knew the witness?
There, and you're right, 10 of the jurors had personal knowledge, and those 10 were Mr. Bratton, and he was the defendant's uncle, and we went through, I can go through those. There were all these personal relationships, if not related, 10 of the 10 of those jurors.
And so do we still consider those 10 as part of the pool that was prejudiced by pretrial publicity, or do those kind of just get put off to the side?
I think those 10, and I can tell you those 10 had personal knowledge and had read things in the paper, had seen the Facebook page with the picture of the child with bruises and a tube in his mouth. I could go through those, but most of them were personal relationships.
Was the information that was placed in the paper about your client in this case, was there any of that that was not simply fact-based?
Yes.
Was there some things stated that were influenced upon the reader?
I think so, because just right before, a week before the trial, the Custer County Chief, which is the main paper, published that my client was charged with child abuse resulting in death and second-degree murder. And she was never charged with second-degree murder. And that was disseminated just the week prior to the trial.
So she had had an original charge that was dismissed, correct? An original charge? She was originally charged with two counts, and one was dismissed prior to trial?
No, she never was charged with second-degree murder.
Was there ever any additional charge other than the child abuse charge?
Her mother had been charged, but she was just charged with the child abuse.
In terms of the news media, it's my understanding there were five print news articles, is that correct?
That's correct.
Three of them were from 2016, two of them were undated but appear to be closer to 2014 when the incident occurred, is that correct?
That would be correct.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure I had the facts straight.
Yes.
And then there's the fifth one that was right, you say, 10 days or so before the trial?
Right before the trial. And that's the one that said she was charged with second-degree murder.
And that was just the day before then you filed your motion for change of venue?
That's correct.
Okay.
The next thing that I think indicates the problem is, and that's number five in the analysis, the ease of selection of the jury. It took us 2 days, and we did in-camera an examination of the jury. And August 22nd, we went from 9 to 5:37. August 23rd, we went from 9:15 to 3:26. And after doing all that and after the trial, the verdict came in less than an hour after we had tried that. The one thing that seemed to really be in effect was the Facebook article that they took a picture of the child in the hospital with bruises and a tube in his mouth. It could have been really easy for the judge to change jurisdiction. She's from St. Paul, and and St. Paul has really nothing to do with Custer County. We've kind of covered the degree of publicity. The other thing that really concerns me, and I'm running out of time here, but it has to do with the judge's examination of prospective juror Porter, and that even after that examination, and it, that juror repeated how hard it would be, I moved to strike her, and the court refused to strike her. And I've laid out in my brief, and you can see that what happened is, because we're running out of, that I think it was the judge's examination that finally got jurors to be ashamed and to say they could sit. It was a very emotional sort of examination of the jurors, and I'd ask the court to sustain my motion.
Thank you, Mr. Potter. Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel, I'm Siobhan Duffy, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of this appellee, the state of Nebraska. Appellant argues the district court erred in denying her motion to change venue, and she puts forth two theories in brief. First, that the pretrial publicity was so pervasive and prejudicial that the district court should presume partiality on the part of the jury. And in the alternate, she argues a review of the applicable eight factors used to analyze a motion to change venue show that a change was warranted. The state believes the district court did not abuse its discretion in denying the motion, and we ask you to affirm the judgment of the district court. I will briefly address each of appellant's arguments. A court will not presume unconstitutional partiality because of media coverage unless the record shows a barrage of inflammatory publicity immediately prior to trial, amounting to a huge wave of public passion or resulting in a trial atmosphere utterly corrupted by press coverage.
So if the paper says that she's charged with second-degree murder and that's totally false, does that come within that?
Well, Your Honor, first note, my recollection of the record is that in county court, the original complaint filed was second-degree murder and child abuse, and that the amended complaint as well listed those two charges, and it was the second amended complaint, excuse me, that was filed, I believe, May 29th of 2014, that only had the one charge. So a couple of those articles in the paper that did list those two charges that were undated, depending on the time they were written, may have been correct. Now, I don't dispute that that last article did incorrectly list that charge. The paper printed a retraction, and I don't think that that single misstatement was so pervasive or so prejudicial that it was invidious and inflammatory, and that we should presume partiality on the part of the jury because of that
one. Was the correction made part of our record?
Yes, the correction was in appellant's second motion, a written motion that was filed to change venue, and that would be in the transcript on...
But it wasn't offered as evidence, so it's not part of our record.
Well, if it's in the transcript...
Take things in the transcript are evidence?
Well, I suppose not. It's part of the record that this court can review. There was, I do know that some jurors testified, or in their examination stated that they were called seeing a retraction. So I suppose I did not question that there was a retraction printed. But again, I just don't think that that single misstatement is to the level that it was so prejudicial and inflammatory that the district court should have presumed partiality.
Well, what about not in the presumption of partiality realm, but when analyzing the factors?
Sure.
Let's talk about, I'm still troubled by that article.
So moving on to the factors, again, I think that the type of press coverage is just one factor that's looked at. I think here, yes, there were about five or six articles that were printed either online or, in the print media. And there was the one article that stated an incorrect charge. Now, as previously noted, those other two articles, depending on when they were written, it may have been a correct charge. But the degree of publicity, they were mainly factual in nature, looking at the articles as a whole. They there was no information presented about the degree to which the articles were circulated throughout the community or the communities in which venue could have been moved to. And I think that the district court did take great care in selecting the jury, that jurors were examined if they stated that they had seen media coverage, and they were asked individually so that they could not, you know, there would not be a danger of them tainting other members, as to whether the coverage they saw, what they recalled from it, and whether they would be able to set that aside and judge based on the facts that were presented. And I think that some of the jurors did state that they recalled, I think more stated they recalled seeing the retraction than seeing the first article. And as I recall, most of the jurors couldn't even remember exactly what had been said incorrectly, that some recalled maybe it was a charge, but mostly they just recalled, we read about it, you know, the trial was starting, there was some incorrect information that they had to retract, but I don't know, I just don't think that the single misstatement of the charge rises to the level that that a juror would not be able to set that aside, particularly when a correction has been made and they've been informed of the charge at the trial. I think that the Nebraska Supreme Court has said that voir dire provides the best opportunity to determine whether a court should change venue. And here, the district court took great care and had a careful and thorough voir dire examination and overruled the motion to change venue. I just don't think appellant showed that she could not receive a fair and impartial trial in Custer County based on the evaluation of those eight factors, and the district court did not abuse its discretion in denying that motion. I've reached the end of my prepared remarks, so.
The cases talk in terms of if voir dire takes 4 weeks, maybe that's evidence that we've got a problem here. Here it took 2 days.
Correct.
Your contention is that the 2 days is not sufficient to create a problem. Where's the line?
Your Honor, I think that it really is going to be, again, you know, the standard is an abuse of discretion, and I think that gives a lot of authority to the trial court. I do note that at the, on page 119 of the Bill of Exceptions, lines 2-6, appellant did request that if the district court denied the motion to change venue, that if any potential jurors had read the articles, that those jurors would be examined separate from the jury. And I think it's kind of a double-edged sword. We want a district court to take the time to have a careful and thorough examination. But I think to your point, the longer, you know, if it goes on for a very long time, it kind of makes you wonder if we're having to go to these lengths. But again, I just think it's really going to depend on the facts of each case. And I don't think that here it was such a long, drawn-out process that it was an indicator that a fair and impartial jury could not be found. Because I think eventually a fair and impartial jury was found. Appellant has not assigned error to the denial of any motions to strike jurors for cause that were overruled, which could not be done if those jurors did not eventually sit on the jury. So I just don't think appellant showed that a fair and impartial jury could not be found in Custer County.
The fact that there's nothing in the record showing the size of Custer County or the size of the community, does that make it so that we can't take judicial notice of that fact of knowing, having been in Nebraska for most of our lives, the further west you go, the smaller the communities are?
Your Honor, and I can't recall at this moment the rules regarding an appellate court taking judicial notice, but I do think that depending on if it's a fact generally known, for example, you know, the U.S. Bureau of Statistics, I don't recall exactly if this court is permitted to take judicial notice of an outside Nebraska fact, but I do think that even if this court did, I don't think that the size of the community means that venue should have been changed. In State v. Galindo, the Nebraska Supreme Court addressed that issue, and the appellant there argued that during voir dire, it was revealed that many of the potential jurors had some degree of relation to a victim or that they were an acquaintance of at least one of the victims. And the Nebraska Supreme Court noted that that is not enough to assume prejudice under Irvin. They stated, to the extent voir dire reveals a relatively small degree of separation between the victims and the community, we find nothing in the record that calls into question the analysis already set forth above, that the jury ultimately selected was fair and impartial, and that to hold otherwise would mandate a change of venue anywhere where the community is relatively small in relation to the crime or the number of victims. And the Nebraska Supreme Court went on to state that absent particular evidence of the community's inability to put on a fair trial, such an ability will not be presumed simply because of the community size and the relationships among its people. And again, as noted here, I think a fair and impartial jury was ultimately selected. And I don't think that there was any particular specialized evidence that this community in this case was unable to put provide a fair and impartial jury. So I think that even if this court could and did take judicial notice of the size of the community, I don't think that it means the district court abused its discretion in its decision.
Thank you. No further questions.
Thank you. We ask you affirm
you
affirm judgment of the district court.
Appellant is out of time. So, counsel, you are both excused and your case is submitted. Thank you.
Thank you.